Good morning, friends. We're coming to the end of our month of May talks and about to start in the June ones. But any work done here or at any lodge, anywhere in the world, no matter on the basis of what language, is all on the basis of the original writings of Theosophy. Those writings by H.P.B. and William Q. Judge. And the operation of any and every lodge is on the basis of this declaration. You may think it's not even worthy of any consideration, but it is, to a student of Theosophy, one of the most important statements of principles, for it is based on the philosophy itself. First and foremost, it declares it is independent devotion. In other words, there are no rules or regulations. There's no constitution and officers and things that you have to agree to. It is your independent devotion that brings you to this study, that keeps you in this study, and that makes you alive in this study. The only thing you must agree to, well, I guess there's two. One would be agree to disagree with someone else and still be cooperative and friendly. But the only real thing is universal brotherhood is a fact. Go against it in your thinking even, and you are breaking the law of your own nature. And the Declaration of the United Lodge is a statement of laws and principles. There's no distinctions because, obviously, if universal brotherhood is a fact, it doesn't matter what your gender is, what your color is, what your background is, what organizations you belong to, what ideas you hold. It doesn't matter. We are still one. And learning and cooperating with each other to understand these principles. The work done at any and every lodge is on the basis of voluntary donations, of one's time, of one's energy, of one's service. And that means whether it's fixing the library or ordering the books or getting the rooms ready for a meeting, whatever, it is all devotion and service. And, of course, financially. The world is becoming far too expensive. Someday soon we may all meet in a tent by the river or something, because who can afford anything else? Especially, have you noticed you have the heat on one day and the air conditioning the next? Or is it the same day? We're getting very confused. Mother Nature is a little annoyed with us. But the work will go on. The work over the ages does not need a place. It needs devoted individuals, and the work will go on. So this morning, our subject is a fascinating one, and we will have a talk presented and then ample time for question and discussion.
The talk is entitled True Clairvoyance. If you meander around the streets of any city in the USA, you are going to inevitably run across a small storefront with provocative signage. Signage that suggests that your future, your past, and that of a loved one can be predicted by examining the palms of your hands, reading the tea leaves or coffee grounds in the bottom of a cup, looking at pictures on a deck of cards, or holding a piece of your jewelry. And let's not forget about the old reliable crystal ball. They said that they were clairvoyant, a seemingly old, intriguing, mystical word, and they did speak with an Eastern European accent. They said they could see into the future and assist in making your decisions the right life-changing decisions for you. For a long time, it was called fortune-telling. However, now in the United States, a variety of local and state laws restrict fortune-telling, requiring the licensing or bonding of fortune-tellers, or they make necessary the use of terminology that avoids the term fortune-teller in favor of terms such as spiritual advisor or psychic consultant. And this should certainly set off some alarms within you. They need a business license to open their doors. Around 1875, the term clairvoyance, which is clear seeing, became familiar to many people. Coincidentally, that is when the Theosophical movement took outward expression. In the latter part of the 19th century and to the present time, many kinds of clairvoyance have been observed and experienced. Clairvoyance itself had its own peculiar development and facility. The different kinds of clairvoyance relating to varying degrees of perception of matter where there was no material thing to be seen, and of events transpiring at a great distance from where the seer was located. Unfortunately, all of these kinds of clairvoyance were limited in their scope. They were but partial clairvoyance. There is, however, true clairvoyance. There is a true school of occultism. There are many false clairvoyants, and there are many false schools of occultism. All of these false schools go in some particular direction that is attractive to the ordinary human mind, the mind that desires to obtain something for itself, as it believes itself to be. So with the different kinds of clairvoyance, if a desire on the part of one endeavoring to find the power in himself is to obtain it for himself, the clairvoyance obtained will never lead him in any true direction. Nothing can give a true understanding of clairvoyance, nor bring to our minds what true clairvoyance may be, except a study of the nature of man, of the nature of the world in which he lives, and the nature of the solar system in which that world exists. The clue to true clairvoyance lies in the septenary nature of man. There are seven distinct planes of consciousness. There are seven distinct states of matter, of which the physical is but one. These seven distinct planes of action are the different departments of man's nature, but it is the same one who acts in all the different departments. Clairvoyance, then, in any true sense, we should understand to be clear seeing in each and every one of those seven departments. All other partial clairvoyance can bring us no great results and certainly no great knowledge. Many are those who have sat for development, have endeavored to obtain the state that is termed the astral plane, in order to be able to see and hear at a distance. But the greatest danger imaginable lies in that direction. The mere seeing or hearing things does not give any understanding of their nature. And many things to which we may be attracted on the astral plane are dangerous and poisonous in their nature. The efforts made to reach that plane are always by means of passivity, And when we allow ourselves to become passive, any influence, whatever, outside of the normal physical perceptions may reach us. We are just as much the prey of evil effects as we are open to good effects, but we are not choosers in either direction. True knowledge and true understanding are gained by a comprehension of laws and principles, and in no other way. Just as there is a law which from the very beginning of our being prompted us step by step to advance in our development, so there is a law which admits us to take step by step up the stairs of knowledge, and not one of those steps can be omitted. There are beings who come into the world from time to time with no marks of distinction that we as human beings can recognize. Yet they are the possessors of a great knowledge which we ardently desire to possess. They are never recognized save but by a very few while they are among us. But when they go, when they leave, when they die, that which they have given us tells us what they were. For example, by the very character of the teachings of Buddha and Jesus, we recognize the nature of the being who brought them. So the teachings of theosophy, a knowledge which is absolutely scientific, covering every department of nature and explaining all that were now mysteries, declare the nature of those beings who brought theosophy, our elder brothers. And they who have raised themselves out of our ranks do not leave us in trouble, in darkness, or in ignorance. Their desire is that we shall see, that we shall understand, and that we should know ourselves, that quickly setting right the ideas which we hold of life, and letting right actions flow from right ideas, we may act as divine beings. However blind, however ignorant, we are not left alone, but are helped just so far as we desire and we merit that help. And just so far as we, with what we learn, help others, we know still less. Just so far as we help others that know less than we do. Unselfishness, and that alone, brings us all the gifts there are. As Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all the rest will be added unto you. Topic this morning, true clairvoyance.
We hope you have some questions. Yes.
The speaker said that things occur, or a true clairvoyant, actually is a true clairvoyant, can see on all the different planes of the human being. So there are seven ways of interpreting what's going on, and that's why they can know the truth of whatever it is they're trying to. Well, if typically we are looking only on one plane, it's just kind of interesting. How do we know that what we're doing really is the right thing if we have no idea what's going on in the rest of the world?
Limited as we are to this plane, but because we do daily touch the plane of sleep, dreaming, deep sleep, we're not really limited to just this plane. We may be deaf and dumb to what we get through deep sleep, but we get it, and it does impress us. How can we make a judgment on what to do on this plane when the other planes are not really available to us? What do you think? How do we make decisions? Yes.
Well, I think the cause of such state of affairs of this planet is,
well, it's the people, not the planet, right?
Well, the people, yeah, obviously, sorry. The people on this planet, the sad state of affairs of humanity on this planet is the result result of not seeing those full seven planes. We have a very, very myopic view of anything, for that matter.
All right, could we disagree with you there for just a moment? Is it that we don't really see or imagine anything further, but we have particular desires? We go after what we want. We don't care if it interferes with you or if it interferes with nature. It's what we desire that's important. So is it a question of not being able to see well enough? You had your hand up.
Perhaps then, for all of us who see on one plane, it just occurs to us, if we as a people had or lived our lives by a philosophy that was proven over time, by the principles of a philosophy, then that might be a good first step.
Yes, the principles. But if we do everything based on ideas, That's how we function. That's how every human being functions on this plane or any other plane, based on the ideas that they hold. If we believe, A, that we're miserable sinners, well, then we're right. If we believe that we have only one life and that's it, well, we're wrong. But how we live that one life colors and affects the coming incarnation. So we're caught in a trap of our own thinking, because every power comes from spirit. Every mistake we make, every wrong, every crime, every ugly thing comes from the power, one power. And that's what makes such a difficult human situation in this planet, on this planet. Yes?
The idea of clairvoyance being seeing things on seven different planes really rings true. So I want to start by saying that. But what I used to think of it as was basically being able to see the big picture, to like look into the future and know what is going to happen. So that involves one of the fundamental paradoxes for me, which is that if you are capable of knowing what is going to happen, that means that everything has already
happened. Right, there's no free will.
let me finish, because this is important for me, please. So the idea that, like, we can't see the whole big picture, that the whole big picture is on a screen of everything that has and ever will happen. And we're looking at a very small area. And if you just open up your lens, you can see it all. But if that is the case, then we really have no ability to choose anything. And I can't...
Well, Theosophy says that is not the case. That one looking with that capacity into the future, if they see something as definite as that, it's because the cause is so well established it cannot be altered. For example, a tsunami is coming, and that is recognized by certain behaviors of the ocean and the creatures. The only thing you can do is run like hell, find a higher place, take what you can to keep it safe. But it's going to happen. But for the most part, what we see, perhaps even as premonitions, if we're not wise ones, what we see are the seeds of something that has been planted by humanity's actions, by our own actions. A seed can be pulled from the ground and prevented. It is up to the individual to recognize it, see it as a weed or a problem. So you have both. You have that which is coming, which cannot be stopped. And you have that which is coming, which is in the germ stage. And many ordinary human beings see and feel those kinds of premonitions and then act on them. Yes?
If I could just add a little bit. The screen that you're seeing at that moment, wide or narrow, regardless, assuming it's fully wide, a number of clairvoyants, you know, well-accepted ones, have spoken exactly to that question. And the answer was that what you're seeing at that moment is the state of your affairs and the rest of humanity, as a matter of fact, as a brotherhood, because it all works together, at that moment. So if you decide to get up in the next 5 minutes and, I don't know, go to China, which is totally uncharacteristic of you. By doing that, by committing that act, you have now changed the future completely. So if you were now in China, to look at that screen, you know, 13 hours later, whatever the flight would require to get there, your image of the same thing would now be different. So we see only what we see at that moment of the entire humanity's state of affairs. But because we're all dynamic, and because we all do things sometimes by habitually, but sometimes non-characteristic to ourselves, that future changes.
Right. You know, there's a statement in the philosophy that if an individual is not to be part of some coming dreadful, difficult event, they either get called away or they feel some premonition to go to China or whatever. Few of us would choose that as the option, but the fact is that life is alive. It is ongoing. It is impressionable. We ourselves have created our connection with events for good, bad, indifferent. We have the choice to change within it. It may not stop it for us, but we will then, because of that growth, have an opportunity to go further than that problem. Yes?
We're thinking, most all of us, if we really think about it, we know what we're speaking of and what we're hearing about, because a mother to her child, there is a connection, a tie, that they have feelings and knowings about at far distances, close friends, people that start a conversation and the other person can finish it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of thinking about someone and the phone rings. We just don't acknowledge it.
Or we just accept it.
Or we just accept it, but in a way that is expressing that power.
Well, that's that inner connection between all of us that we don't recognize it for what it is. It is a spiritual bond between us. And matter of fact, Theosophy says if we didn't have that, we couldn't understand each other when we speak. If you think about it, what is speech? It's a funny little thing done by a funny little thing in your mouth, putting together funny little sounds, and you know what the other person means by it. But it's just as easy to misread something. We recall we were going to sail to Europe and had a terrible dream of the boat on fire. I mean, completely surrounded by fire. It was terrifying. We were going to cancel the trip. And a friend said, no, go talk to this spiritual advisor, is that what you called them? Go talk to this woman. She's very good. She won't charge you any money either. Just go. So we did. And she said, oh, your interpretation is completely wrong. When you see something surrounded by fire, that is protection, not something to fear. Who knew? And of course, the ship made it and now sits. That was its very last voyage. And it now sits in South Philadelphia, the SS United States. So we often misread the very information that we get, as we heard in the talk. It's our own nature that's being reflected through us. So we have to learn a new language, a new way of being. Yes?
Well, we wanted to go back to this idea of is there really free will, and, you know, and mm-hmm. therefore the psychic, and does that prove that we don't have free will? We don't mean to, you know, overuse a cliche, but it really is explained in the teachings, this example or this analogy, that, you know, the seed of the acorn has the plan for the tree, but the tree's only going to come forth if the conditions are right. And as we recall, we read that the elder brothers of humanity see humanity as the trunk of the tree, and that is their concern.
Mm-hmm.
Each individual is a leaf, and you need to do what you need to do, right? But the trunk will survive. Each individual leaf
nice.
In one particular cycle may or may not. And then now, as far as predestination, you can't look at the thousands of acorns and know which ones are going to take root because of all the conditions that may or may not happen from one tree. But you can know that out of every thousand acorns, if you observe, a certain percentage of them are going to take root and operate from that basis. So we think this whole predestination thing on an individual basis is a very dangerous assumption.
Right. Well, we always like the very simple example of if you put your hand in the fire, that was free will. But you're destined to be burned unless you have some sort of fireproof glove on or something. The way we think about everything in the universe colors and affects the way we react to everything in the universe. If we think we're only here for one life, why shouldn't we just go after everything we want in spite of everybody else? Yes.
Now we're approaching the topic of human intelligence.
No, we have to prove it first.
It's all a matter of intelligence, but what kind of intelligence can be displayed by man that gives him clairvoyance, clairaudience?
Well, the intelligence that we see in the human kingdom, we think that's the epitome until we hear of a great teacher and realize how far beyond us that intelligence goes. But the intelligence in the human kingdom is the blending of the thinker, the spiritual reincarnating ego, entering into the human form, which has its own level of intelligence. So it is a blend, but it's all from one power, spirit. The power in the mineral, in the vegetable, in the animal is all one and the same power. It is consciousness. Now, we have a kind of arrogance that says, consciousness in the mineral? Well, it's there just because we can't see it, although science recognizes it. It is one intelligence in various levels. Here, as the human kingdom, we are spiritual beings working through this level of intelligence in order to recognize what we really are, spiritual beings. It's our school. It's our workplace. We have to elevate the lower consciousness through our use, but we also have to elevate our own use of consciousness. We are all clairvoyant. It's just we only see what we want to see so that we can use what we want to use. We have forgotten that we are responsible for the world we make. Yes.
If I could just go back to predestination and seeing
to what? I'm sorry.
Predestination and seeing the future. Casey spoke about a situation where he said the world will be subject to major cataclysm in 68 and 98. But he, and if you think of late 60s, the Cold War, that certainly could have been the case. But he also put a caveat in, as the world stands today.
Right.
In 1931 or whatever it was. So as he saw the conditions of the planet in 1931, and I forgot the exact date that was, that by 1968 or 98, we would have destroyed ourselves, surely, or had some major cataclysm on the planet. But people behaved differently or uncharacteristically, or somebody did something altruistic within that year, from 1931 to 1968, and guess what? That prediction never came through.
Well, let's give some credit to the Masters of Wisdom the effort to create a country where you could sit freely and talk about these ideas. In the past, who knows how many times we gave our life to be able to have these teachings, which were not written down, which had to be passed orally between each other. So what was a question of great personal sacrifice then to have these teachings, it's now so easy that we think it has no value sometimes. but that brotherhood of adepts, creating a country where one could freely, and we should always remember, freedom comes with responsibility. We have to protect that freedom for ourselves and for each other. But the fact is that we can change the future, not just for ourselves, but for this city, this state, this country. But we have to make the effort. It isn't just by sitting somewhere and thinking high and noble thoughts. It's by participating, bringing our understanding, our wisdom, our philosophy into the effort, voting while we have the right to vote, and especially women should feel that way, a tremendous sacrifice to get that for women here. And this is a kind of dumb personal thing that we just realized, but we do want to share it. We just heard a study that women have, of course, this sort of all-encompassing reaching out nature sharing sort of thing. So we constantly interrupt each other and find it completely normal. It's just a way of jumping in and being part of each other. But men don't like that. And we know that we interrupt often because of that. We treat everyone as though they're a woman. And that's a compliment. But the fact is, we're apologizing. So keep reminding us when we do it. Yes.
The seed idea was very helpful, and the idea that certain things are so fixed that they're inevitably going mm-hmm. to happen, other than so thank you for that. Is there any way that you could give an example, like of one idea and what it would be like understanding it on all seven planes? I don't understand that. Like, what are the seven levels of understanding?
Yes, good luck with that. We put together, this is the HPB and the key. We have a different set of senses in dream life, have we not? We are on quite another plane, as there are seven fundamental forces in nature and seven planes of being. So there are seven states of consciousness in which man can live, think, remember, and have his being. To enumerate these here is impossible. And for this, one has to turn to the study of Eastern metaphysics. And if you turn to the glossary, there's a wonderful definition. That it's under Bodhiyanga. The seven branches of knowledge or understanding, comprehending seven degrees of intelligence, esoterically, seven states of consciousness. 1, memory. 2, correct understanding, discrimination of the law. 3, energy. 4, spiritual joy. 5, tranquility or quietude. 6, ecstatic contemplation. 7, absolute indifference. So, we're never going to be told the answer to your question. What we can do, though, is make certain assumptions. Where are we in a state of meditation, truly in a state of meditation, where you're no longer going, you know, my foot hurts, maybe I should move it, oh, and I have to do this later. When you've calmed all that, and you are, for that moment, weightless, what plane or state do we think we are in? Wouldn't you think unity? Wouldn't that be a kind of bliss of oneness? So let's say that's the highest state. Coming down from there, what do we have? We have understanding. When you really understand something, when you go, I see. I mean, it's an epiphany. It's a dramatic moment in your life. You understand someone or something, and you see it clearly for that moment. Maybe you couldn't explain it to anybody else, but you have encompassed it. Intuition. You move down until you get to your everyday working mind. That's the best answer we can give you, so We would challenge you to take any idea you have and try to see it from all the levels of comprehension that you can. I know that didn't satisfy, but the only thing that will satisfy the mind is complete understanding. And that comes from within oneself. Remember, we're taught the master lies within. It's not someone outside you're looking for. It is you yourself as a spiritual being, and you're separated just from the moment by the way you use your mind. Your mind can go higher to the highest possible state, or it can go lower to the most miserable, selfish human being you can imagine. You are that power. So if you really want to know, it's within yourself you have to discover. Yes.
Well, wouldn't the highest state be the realization of universal brotherhood? We say it as a fact, and one can take that as a theorem, in mm-hmm. a sense. And but once one has worked through it and really realizes that it's a fact in nature, wouldn't that be the highest state?
We would add to that the realization and acting on it.
Yes.
Because a realization is not worth anything unless you're able to put it into practice here. That's what this plane, this state of consciousness is for, to take those high spiritual values and put them into practice here. Yes?
You spoke of indifference, or I guess not making attachments. How do you ensure
yes.
it's not a passive state where you just, where you just mm-hmm.
We think one quick and easy way to make sure your indifference or resignation is real and not laziness is to ask yourself, would I do this if it were something that I really wanted or really cared about? If that is so, where you would not get up and stir from it, then you can be, okay, it appears that I am resigned. But what I have to be is resigned about the things that are coming to me. We think the Gita's way of saying, unto thee who findeth no fault. Be resigned to what is coming to you. You're a magnet, and you have set up all these electrical magnetic connections, and things are being pulled to you because you asked for them. And to try to turn them away, to use your powers to force them elsewhere because you don't want them now, is to create a bigger problem for yourself. So you find no fault, you accept, all right, this person is being horrible to me, but they could only be horrible to me because I set it up. Therefore, it's me I have to worry about, not this person. So a blessing on their head, let me get smarter. So we are resigned to the conditions we find ourselves in. But if you really start to do that, you're resigned to the realization, I'm powerful. I am a powerful spiritual being. I created all this mess. It takes a very big energy to have made the mess I'm facing. I can fix it, and no one else can, only I. Yes. This is our subject for next week, too. It's called Theosophy in Everyday Life. Yes.
The previous statement reminds me of some wisdom taught by very brilliant people who said, no attachment, no resistance, and no judgment of others. Mm-hmm. If you consolidate those three, I think it reminds me, in my mind, the Christ statement, something to the effect of, look at the lily of the valley, it neither toils mm-hmm. nor swirls. I'm not doing a good job of it, but it neither toils nor swirls, but no such
everything is provided for it. Yes.
No such beauty can be found anywhere on the planet. And it seems to me that you want to be the lily of the valley. You don't resist, you're not attached, and you're not passing judgment on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, I think you will have gone a long way.
We always thought maybe the goal should be to be a water fountain. Nobody ever thanks a water fountain, but they're very glad to have come up on one. So if we would only get humble and realize that everything we know because we found it with others, either their words, their thinking, their writing. Everything we have is shared wisdom. It was mentioned in the talk about the elder brothers. It is said that at the time of the incarnation of the thinkers into the human form, the midway point of evolution, we weren't here the first 3.5 rounds. We were in the background like the teachers waiting for the school. That at that midway point when we incarnated, it must have been chaos and confusion. I mean, you can't take yourself from a state of meditation and then suddenly you're in a room full of noisy children. And you're one of the noisy children. So it must have been chaotic. So they taught us, impressed on our minds, brotherhood, honesty, cooperation, agriculture, science. And that's why if you look at the history, that at least the history that we have of humanity, you see the same things repeated everywhere. All buildings are somewhat alike. All chairs are somewhat alike. All peoples act very much in the same way. Some sophisticated, some not. But the point is we all have the same intrinsic ideas given to us by beyond Buddhas, spiritual beings from a higher plane who came to assist this process, who had to have lived through the same thing on some other planet, in some other ages. So we are so blessed, and we take those blessings and use them to put one over on somebody or cheat the income tax people, or we use all our skills in such a petty, puny way when what we have inside us is beauty and poetry and music and joy that we could share with the world if we were willing. Yes?
How do you differentiate between clairvoyance and inspiration and revelation?
Ah, and what was the last one?
Revelation.
Revelation. How do you differentiate between clairvoyance, inspiration, and revelation? You would need clairvoyance, clear seeing, in order to be able to value and judge a revelation from someone else. Clairvoyance is a power. You would need it to look at your inspiration. But a true artist never has to look at their inspiration. Literally, it inspires them. It sets them on fire. It gets them to where they need to be in order to create. But they need true seeing in order to follow through on that process. There are so many people we have met who are potential poets, potential musicians, but they've never done anything about it. And part of it is not being able to clearly see themselves as part of that process. So we have a whole generation of people listening to music and reading other people's writing. Although the internet has changed that, self-publishing has become phenomenal. People are beginning to trust their talents. But we think, if you think of clairvoyance as clear seeing, I see clearly what I need to do. It may be partial, because that may be all we can do at the moment. But if we honor it and trust it, it's like cleaning up our own glasses so we see further and better. But the most important consideration in all of this, and we haven't mentioned it, is motive. Why do I want to see clearly? Do I want to know what you're up to? Do I want to know what you think? Do I want to know what's the best stock to invest in? All of that will absolutely petrify my own powers because they're not for that use. They're not for personal gain. If my motive is tainted, so will my life be tainted and future lives. So I have to work on my motive and work on seeing clearly the mess that I've already planted so that I can start to fix it. It isn't important that I step forward with powers. It's important that I use the powers I have to clean up my steps. Did you have your hand up? No, okay, yes.
The idea of motive is interesting to me. Part of me thinks that the motive is just understanding what is on one of those seven planes. So you can't change it on that plane. All you can do is shift to a different plane of understanding. So to me, it's kind of futile to try to change your motive. Like, that's part of what is the destiny of that plane. So all you can do is understand, because that same desire gets kind of translated into seven different manifestations in the seven different planes. I don't know if this is true, but it's just what makes sense to me.
And I want to congratulate you, because I didn't interrupt you. I wanted to twice. The fact is, if you were standing in a hallway and there are seven rooms, are you telling me that my motive for opening any one of those doors is going to be colored and affected by those rooms? My motive is my position, where I stand inside myself. And often we're not even honest about our motives. One of the things we learn early on in the philosophy is the best way to judge what's going on within you is to watch for your feelings after you've done something. You may think your motive is to be generous and to be kind, and then you do something, and then you're like, well, they could have at least thanked me. And that's a clue. I wasn't acting to be kind or generous. My motive was to get gratitude or attention or affection. So we look at the results in order to see what our real motive was. Our motive is our heart power. And whatever plane we're working on, it is one and the same. You don't have one motive for your highest things and another motive for here. Or maybe we do, and maybe that's why we're such a mess, most of us. We're so conflicted. But that absolute, that meditative, highest state of unity we can imagine, our motive there is no different from our motive anywhere else. And it's in our power and control, no one else's. Yes?
Does karma play a role in helping us to get the right motive?
If it weren't for karma, we couldn't get anything. The result of action. You know, if we would use our imagination more in a constructive way, we might find more clear seeing in our lives. If we would see, okay, this situation comes to me. I'm standing in line at the drugstore and the computer breaks down. And I've been standing in line for 15 minutes and now nothing is going to happen. What are our choices? We can get angry. Angry with the clerk. Angry with the level of service. Angry about the whole thing and storm out of there. Or we can say, what an interesting karma. I wonder if it's my magnetism that destroys computers. We can at least turn it into a fun and interesting thinking. We can, and this is even more fun, offer to help the clerk by doing the arithmetic in our heads or on paper so that they can see that it's accurate, so they can take care of a few customers, including us. We have all these choices. The karma is the event. The future is what you do inside yourself because of that event. Now, if you can't do any of those responses, you can at least say to the clerk, I'm so sorry, this must be awful for you, and put your things back on the shelf, be a good citizen, and calmly leave. Those are your choices. But it's all karma. If you act like a witch in the situation, and men do too, you can be guaranteed that you're going to carry that seed within you, and it will bloom and grow depending on your other choices. So it's all karma. Luckily, we are karma, so we don't have to worry about it. Yes?
Well, we're approaching slowly the idea of harmony in all departments of nature, and that we have to learn the laws governing each department. It's like playing a piano. You can get beautiful music if you obey the laws of harmony. So karma is another name for the karma would be harmony, the love, and getting really up there when we speak of that in those terms, which are understood by everyone, for the human being.
Some people are born with an inharmonious body. Things just don't work well, and they suffer from it all their lives. But many people in that condition are the sweetest, most generous, kindest, wisest, clear-seeing people ever. In a way, we've often thought that maybe being free of some of the physical is not such a bad idea, but we have to learn to do that. We have to bring ourselves into harmony, and the mental, emotional harmony is far more difficult than the physical. We all know that. Whenever you lose your temper, we are told, you shatter inner constructions within yourself. It's as though you're building a form for yourself that will be a harmonious form. And when you lose your temper, you shatter it and you have to start over. When you get afraid, you freeze it. And there are various degrees of difficulty in building this body of concentration. But the fact is, we can do it. And the fact is, karma is the way we can do it. It doesn't matter how many times we fail, it matters how many times we try. So it's always plus one. You had your hand up first.
Yeah, if I could just go back to the universal brotherhood concept. To me, it never seems like we're all brothers and we should hold hands and sing kumbaya. To me, I think humanity has abdicated one of the greatest powers that it has in not understanding the concept of universal brotherhood, meaning that we're all connected. If, you know, the Buddhist monks together, when they chant, they do these certain things that they've been filmed, and they're just magic. I mean, to an average person, what these 10 or 20 monks have done is absolutely black magic. But when they take their mental power and they chant on these actions that they perform, and they do these things, it's because of that connectedness, and because they know that they're all connected mentally, telepathically. The power that human beings have when they think of each other, not just of themselves, is amazing. It's unlimited.
However, the power is itself unlimited and requires no one else. Putting it together intensifies the expression of it, not the power of it. We haven't really abdicated the sense of brotherhood. We've just retracted it. I will be brotherly to anyone who thinks like I do. I will be brotherly to anyone who's from the same country I am. I will be brotherly if. It's always an if that we add on to it. One of the biggest problems and tragedies in the world is karma keeps bringing the results of past thinking. So you have two groups, and they are in opposition to each other. They're born that way. This generation may not have had anything to do with the causes, and yet they are ready to annihilate each other. And it is karma. It's the past history coming at them. And one of the groups has to be able to stand and say, no, as Gandhi did, no. As Martin Luther King did, no. It will not be allowed. We will not fight back. You'll have to storm over us. One of them has to do that in order for this karma to be broken, because the irrationality of it all is so total. So we haven't abdicated brotherhood. We've narrowed it down to our little tiny stream of thought. Yes?
Mm-hmm. With respect to the last, what was just said, it sounds great and it has been done.
Mm-hmm.
Gandhi and Martin Luther King. But, you know, who among us is wise enough,
right,
or how do we determine or get the wisdom to recognize the difference between we are being not responsive to the violence and that will cure the violence eventually versus we are being irresponsible and not protecting our citizens? How do you balance those two?
Yeah, well, you read the Gita 2,000 times, but the fact is the war that we're supposed to be fighting is inside ourselves, within our own nature. None of us can be wise in that way that we can make judgments about which side should do what and which side is right or wrong. All we can do is try to dispassionately stand in the center and observe and try to understand. But we're not here to fix anybody else, not even someone in our family. We're here to offer support and whatever wisdom we have and encouragement, but we're not here to fix each other. So it all comes back to working within yourself. And if you're in an opportunity where you can share wisdom, you do, if you're asked. You don't impose it on anyone. Yes?
Well, we were wondering about limited brotherhoods, like the police, for example, or the military, or some kind of fraternal organization. Is that worse than, I mean, than no brotherhood at all? Because they seem to be sympathetic towards their own, but maybe they don't carry on outside the organization.
But that's a problem for us all, because we think if you could have some true clairvoyance and look down on an entire police department, wouldn't you find, just as is true in most situations, 98% of them are good, beautiful, hardworking, honest, trustworthy people. You've got 2% usually that are complainers, maybe frauds, maybe, you know, in it for the wrong reason. Therefore, the brotherhood is not at fault, but certain members of it. You know, there was a little girl whose father was killed very recently, a policeman, and the entire police force of that state, we think, showed up for that little girl's graduation. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful and genuine and real, and you could see that it changed that little girl in the way she responded to what was a terrible, sad situation for her. So it isn't the brotherhood or the narrowness of the brotherhood. It's the individuals who are not willing to share that basis of reality. You know, basically, human beings are awesome. They're amazing. Think about it. Even if you take us just as physical beings, I mean, come on. No computer in the universe could do what your eyes do in 1 second, registering and recognizing and seeing all these levels of color and distance. That's just that part of the physical. What about the fact of what the brain does all day long? What if the parts of your body behaved like humans? Your heart would be saying, now, come on, I'm the most important. I'm the one that matters. And the brain would be saying, oh, I think I'll turn you off. I mean, if we had that within us, it would be a disaster. We have a brotherhood of varying different parts with various different kinds of energy. And they work together for one purpose. And that purpose is soul. We are spiritual thinkers, souls in evolution, given the privilege of a human body that we don't have to teach to breathe, to heartbeat, to synapse in the brain. We don't have to do any of that. We just have to teach it to do what we want it to do. And that's where we have to work at, what our wants are. We remind you that we meet on Wednesday evenings for our study class from 7:45 to 9, and that next Sunday's talk is Theosophy in Daily Life. Meeting is adjourned. I have a package.